Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Lots that we're going to discuss on the agenda. Of course, all eyes zoned into the budget speech and the latest unemployment figures that we see in South Africa. But before we get there, there's a number of factors that actually speak to how leadership is required to make sure that businesses are able to thrive. And there's typically the one big title that many of us often aspire to attain and achieve, and maybe already have, but depends on the scale of the business, and that is Chief Executive Officer. So we've been noticing that there's been a number of shifts in the corporate landscape in South Africa where CEOs of prominent businesses have decided to step down. Think of Ian Williamson at Old Mutual, who's going to take up early retirement in August of 2025. Dr. Nomba Satsengwa of Exxaro, who later resigned with immediate effect after an ongoing investigation within the organization. Sibanye Stillwater's Neil Froneman, who's also going to retire later on this year. Not forgetting Greg Solomon, the CEO or Managing Director of McDonald's South Africa. So whether in the public or private sector, publicly listed businesses, or even those that are JSE listed, it definitely shows that there's a heightened level of focus that needs to be paid to adequate succession planning for leadership roles in business. One man who knows all about this is Andrew Woodburn, the Managing Director of Amprop Woodburn Man. Mr. Woodburn, it's always amazing to speak to you, sir. Welcome. Andrew, you're live on Kaya Biz. I'm hoping that we've managed to unmute the mics, manage the technical gremlins in the system. Can you hear us?
Good. Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be back with you in particular and with your listeners.
Fantastic. Oh, Andrew, it's always amazing speaking to you because you always give us such phenomenal insights into the inner workings, really, of leadership roles, the recruitment structures, and of course, just understanding the level of responsibility that's typically required in these roles. But let's talk about one thing, maybe being a CEO and actually having that particular role and function, but also understanding that at some point it comes to an end. And this is where succession planning becomes so critical. What's the approach that is typically adopted by corporates?
So, Gugu, you know, you didn't even need me. You hit the nail on the head in your intro, in that in some cases, succession has two meanings. The one is a planned process, and I think we'll unpack that tonight. But often it's used maybe erroneously in a straight replacement. Mm-hmm. And some of the examples you've shared tonight were actually just replacements. The company, the nominations committee, if we're talking about a listed business, and so on, probably weren't ready. And therefore, it's a replacement. And if they're lucky, they've got somebody internally. But succession planning in terms of when will this happen? What do we need to be ready? What process are we going to follow? And so on is quite a more complex process that nomination committees on a listed business grapple with. Family-owned businesses grapple with this too, because often they might run out of bloodline. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, be casting around where maybe a son or a nephew or a niece would be taking over. And in many cases, these families have run out of their own succession models. And so let me start off with before you're welcome to interrogate me. But in the old way, in the old days, when I say old days, we're probably talking 15 years and older. Mm-hmm. You know, this was done by the nominations committee. And I always now refer to it when I speak to boards as the famous list.
Oh.
So these committees would look at all their staff and they would generate a list. And in general, the list would be prepared in two ways. What will we do if there's an emergency? And there you and I, Gugu, have seen when tragedy strikes that essentially like often the CFO or the COO, whilst they might not be the long-term successor, will step in to guide the company forward. And one of those tragedies that you might recall was when Italtal, for example, the owner's son and ex-girl were killed in a plane crash. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the emergency kicked in and they had to make an interim solution. So that was the short-term model. And the long-term model was then, oh, we've got a list of some of the people we know in our business. And if they develop or if they've given the right opportunities or if they're stimulated in the right way, we think there might be a potential CEO in 4 years or 7 years. And in the old days, sometimes that would conveniently match when the CEO might be leaving. But a lot of that has now failed for many, many reasons.
Do we know why?
So, Gugu, I don't know if you've seen that happening. I don't know if the listeners can recall, for example, some of the examples I've given. But that was how it was done. And as I've mentioned, for many reasons, this now begins to fail.
Yeah. And maybe let's talk about those reasons as to why it does fail, Andrew. Where are the shortfalls?
Yeah. So we're now living in you know, what some of the scenario plan is called the VUCA world. And what does that mean for the CEO and, in fact, many other of the corporate leaders themselves is, number one, you know, executive tenure is much more volatile than ever before. If you went and looked, for example, at Mark Lamberti being the founder and CEO of Massmart, you know, he built that business and that institution over decades. Christo Visser has exhibited the same and so on. And I'm picking in particular these sort of, you know, well-known, long-running founder or CEOs. Mm. But tonight you just mentioned, for example, Ian, who's only been in the role for 5 years. Mm. And so we can see that these long, stable leadership candidates are not enduring the test of time like they once did. So that's because the world is more volatile, but it's also maybe this, what I call the soccer team and manager scenario, where when the team isn't winning quarter on quarter on quarter, you know, you change the coach. And so there's maybe a piece of that happening in our more short-termism that we do. The second thing is that in some cases nowadays, the leadership doesn't actually show their cards to the organization. You know, so in the old days, the CEO might have the trust of the chairman, and in some cases still happens, and they would tell the chairman, I think I'm here for 5 years or I'm here for 10 years, and therefore we should begin to get ready. In some cases these days, you wouldn't say that as leadership, because if the board says, oh, well, he's going to be only here for 2 more years, they might say, let's replace him right now. So there's some of that going on in some cases too. And then we saw a change in leadership requirements when COVID happened, that stable leaders were asked to stay longer. Mm. And that was probably a good thing. But then the talent in waiting, so the individuals either on the exco or one level off who may have thought they were ready for the CEO role might have moved on to CEO roles elsewhere because we have a talent-constrained market. And now the famous list that I just spoke about is irrelevant because the person's name who's on the list has just left. And then, of course, we've got other agendas in our economy, such as transformation and turnarounds, where, in fact, you might need a very different type of person to come in and lead the organization. So if you throw all this into the mix, suddenly that famous list is not as relevant as maybe the people who formulated it would like it to be. And that's certainly what we've seen. And so things have modified into what I call the modern way. But, you know, Gugu, I'm sure you can reflect, being a business journalist, mm-hmm. on some CEOs and CFOs exiting for various reasons that might have fitted into what I've just shared.
Oh, 100%. In my mind, I'm already thinking about Oceana, where there was, well, again, allegations and concerns around, financial malfeasance, and the CFO had to be looked for months and months on end. You think about companies like Standard Bank, where at one point, Ben Kruger and Sim Shabalala were joint CEOs.
Yes.
And that was almost a management of, you know, the dynamics
probably,
in the
probably one
sector.
Of the most unique and I
right?
would say successful transitions, which absolutely bucked the normal trend.
Definitely. And maybe there's some lessons to learn there. And at the same time, I'm also thinking, Andrew, of Sean Summers, the current CEO of Pick n Pay, who has a long history of actually working with the founding father, Raymond Ackerman, left after some time and now has been called in to essentially fix the retailer. So it almost seems as though the world of succession planning is evolving to all these new models, either going back to those who have a wealth of institutional knowledge.
And Sean isn't the only one. You know, we've got a number of other what I call old bulls or returnees, mm-hmm. right? The tried and trusted leaders that are brought in to do a particular task. But you're right. So remember, there's the short-term replacement model. Let's go to the market because something's happened and we need to find a replacement. And then actually one of the key differentiators in modern succession planning, and you're going to laugh at me, Gugu, but it's the time that it takes. Often a proper succession planning methodology and process will be between 3 and 5 years, not 3 months. And this is one of the big differences between the famous list and a modern methodology of building a pool of succession candidates, which you might want to be able to choose from in the medium term. But it's got to be conscious. It takes time. It's an investment. You've got to mitigate against exit. You've got to be able to select these individuals. So, you know, now you're beginning to understand that with boards changing, with economics changing, and even in our own country with the political powers changing, it's very difficult for nominations committee or key shareholders to navigate this with sort of, let's say, a North Star, which is the end point.
And that's so important because typically we always think that the retirement plan is the end point, right? But not only are we seeing a few CEOs retire a lot earlier, but some don't even make it to retirement. And because of a number of issues, actually might leave their job a lot sooner. But I do want us to talk about the magic of institutional knowledge that is still held by executive leaders who might be 60, 65, but still have so much to contribute to the business. Typically, we often see them sitting on the board as a non-executive director before or after a period of taking some gardening leave. But is there a secret sauce to making sure that you still keep some of that knowledge within the business or within the sector or within the country at least?
Yeah, there is. I mean, you mentioned McDonald's. And obviously, whilst the McDonald's CEO looks like he might land up on the board, in fact, it seems like business media might be seeing that as a double-edged sword. He has institutional knowledge, but it seems from outside that their commentary might indicate that his style and some other elements of what he's done might not be beneficial. So, you know, it can cut both ways. And I just use that based on public information if you go online right now. But,
sure.
But I mean, there's two parts to this. Remember, I talked about a 3 to 5 year process. So if your CEO is complicit and has agreed with the board that they've got an exit that's determined, and let's use Neil Froneman at Sabania as an example. That company, I know the HR machinery behind there in the board, and Neil, my sense was, has entrusted in a transparent way his plans to the board. Then the board has come out, and this is public, has announced both that Neil will be stepping down. They've given you the date. And they've also given you what they're going to do about it. This is his successor. This is when it's going to happen.
Plan.
And
mm-hmm.
of course, his successor was an internal candidate. So we'll, in many of my clients talk about growing your own timber, right? So they've developed an internal and the baton will be passed in a seamless manner.
I hope to be timber someday. I don't know where. A nice big financial institution, hey, Andrew?
Well, we can all try. Look, you've got to get in there and shoot the lights out to start with.
True.
You know, just to give you a brief overview,
sure.
I always say to nominations committees, you want to take the best of the internal candidates. And from a governance perspective, you want to compare them against the best of the external candidates.
Gotcha.
Because the nomination committee, that is the committee that nominates the proposed CEO successor, should be able to sleep easy at night that they have proposed the very best candidate to take over. Of course, you want to grow your own timber, institutional knowledge, but likewise, in order to execute their independence, they should compare the best internal with the best external. And there's a whole multi-year process that goes on behind that to bring this to the fore when the institution needs it. And that's the magic.
So true. And as you're saying this, Andrew, I realize there's a whole nother conversation to be had about how large corporates are actually actively investing into executive leadership programs for their employees to quite literally grow their own timber, as you say.
Yeah. And you know, in tough times, Gugu, I mean, often it's marketing and HR budgets that are restricted. And then in many cases, it's training that must be done, but leadership development is the thing that gets short shifted. And then when it comes to saying, but we've got a gap or a vacuum in our senior leadership, people look at each other and wonder why. This is an ongoing process, really, because you should be doing succession planning not only for the CEO, but for critical roles in your organization, such as the finance person, or if you have a very technical organization that needs deep technical knowledge, you should also be doing a technical ladder of succession that you build over time, ready to take over as required.
100%. Andrew, such a pleasure speaking to you, sir. I could speak to you all day, always learning from you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for the invitation. To you and your listeners, have a lovely evening.
Thank you so much. That's Andrew Woodburn, the Managing Director of Amrop Woodburn Man, a business that has a wealth of knowledge and experience in actively participating in executive leadership appointments. And as you've heard, adequate succession planning. which is something that we are seeing big business in South Africa share and shift its perspective around.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.